Adam's next three kills weren't so clean after that. He let the fourth one scream because he was sleeping with a smile on his face.
They're planning on killing children. And this one is smiling.
When Adam got through with him, the man's corpse reeked of terror and pain. Adam needed to control himself better. He couldn't afford to lose control of the wolf because he might never regain it. And he had a job that no one else could do to his satisfaction.
I know about duty as man and wolf.
The next bedroom was empty, though it smelled of a woman. Part of him knew he would have to give that hunt to someone less eager than he was. Daryl, Adam's second, was still too much a gentleman to kill a woman without suffering for it. Warren was more practical. Adam made no sound as he opened the next room.
I won't be hunting yet after all.
He'd found the woman from next door, and she and Mr. Jones had evidently found themselves too involved in each other to notice his last victim's cries. He'd promised Jones to honey. It was harder than it should have been to leave them alone, but he closed the door as quietly as he could. There were three more people to kill. He could hear them. He was getting hungry. He'd broken the next man's neck with a swat of his paw. It was quick and clean. The second one was a woman crouched behind her cot, which she'd knocked over to provide cover. Then she pulled out one of the dart guns and started firing. The first dart hit badly and bounced off his shoulder. Warned, he dodged the second two and jumped the cot to crush her skull between his jaws. He shook her once to break her neck and make sure of the kill, then dropped the body. He didn't enjoy killing women. Adam stopped where he was, the corpse on the ground halfway between his front paws, and fought off the urge to eat her.
There's no time.
When he was certain he had himself under control, he headed off to hunt down the next man. That one had barricaded himself in one of the rooms Adam had visited earlier. The door was iron-bound and thick, meant to look like the old colonial Spanish doors. As soon as Adam touched the doorknob, the large door stopped the bullets that the man shot into it with what must not have been a very large caliber handgun. But the gunfire did one thing. Mr. Jones opened his door down the hall, a gun in his hand. Adam dropped his head. The woman hid behind Mr. Jones. Jones shot twice. One bullet skimmed Adam's side, but the other missed him altogether. Hitting a moving target isn't easy. Adam deliberately rammed Jones with his shoulder and knocked him off his feet. Adam pinned his ears at Jones's companion. His father had taught him only a cowardly man would hurt a woman. But this woman had agreed to kill people because they were associated with his pack, to kill the children. Still, Adam killed her quickly. Jones scrabbled with his gun, trying to get his shaking hands to work. Adam left the woman's body, grabbed a gun out of the human's hands, and crushed it. He dropped it, now unusable, to the floor. Adam's jaws ached to finish Jones.
But he is for honey.
Revenge was a dangerous thing, but a quick, clean act sometimes allowed the victim closure. So he left Jones and went to deal with the only other cantrip agent he'd left alive. Adam hit the solid wood door with his shoulder and cracked the wood, breaking it free of its hinges. The man was on the floor, blood pouring from a bullet wound. Either Jones's gun had been a bigger caliber and gone through the door, or it had gone through the wall. His gun lay on the floor beside him, and his hand couldn't get a grip on it.
Tiger, tiger burning prize.
He turned his head toward Adam.
In the forest, in the forest.
Then he looked Adam in the eye.
Forest.
His body convulsed once more. Then he lay still.
Did he who made the lamb make thee?
It was a question that Adam held dearly. Had God made werewolves? How could he have done so and still be benevolent? But those were questions for another time. Not all of the cantrip agents were dead yet. Adam called out to his pack, summoning them to the last of the hunt. They came, stumbling and slow, and mostly in wolf form. Only Warren, Daryl, and a couple of others held on to their humanity. Adam first approached Honey's wolf.
With a flick of his head, he sent her hunting. When she'd found what he'd sent her after, Adam sent the rest of the pack past him. Then he changed back to human. Whether due to Mercy's meddling or the killing field he'd made of the ground floor of the winery, the change was faster than usual. He found a landline in one of the offices and called Mercy first. He needed to hear her voice, to remind him that he was not entirely a killer, a monster. But her cell rang through to voicemail.
Breathe.
Mercy was smart. She would have destroyed her phone to keep them from tracking her. If she were dead, he would know. Next, Adam called Elisaveta.
Who is calling at such an hour?
Elisaveta, it's Adam.
Adamia, we have been so worried.
I need a cleanup.
Adam leaned against the wall.
This is a landline. Can you trace it?
Duh. This is not a problem. How many bodies?
He couldn't remember. Hadn't kept count. Adam looked at his hands and realized that they were black with blood. Elisaveta understood his silence.
That many? We will come unto it as necessary.
It has to be done before dawn. They are sending a helicopter at dawn.
Then they will find nothing.
We need transport too, for 30 wolves.
This we can also do.
And I need to know where Mercy is.
She is at Kyle and Warren's house. I thought you would ask, so I sent one of my grandsons to follow her.
Good. Come as soon as you can.
Yes.
Elisaveta was nearly 70. She was powerful, but her body was beginning to fail her. In the last 2 years, she'd lost both of the people she'd been training to take her place in incidents involving his wolves. She might have blamed the pack, except that she liked Adam. He was at least as old as Elisaveta, but she didn't know it. She understood in abstract that werewolves could live a long time, but she'd never made the connection to him. If she ever did process what she knew, she would hunt him down and try to make him turn her. He would kill her before he did that. The werewolves had a taboo about attempting to turn anyone who was not a normal human. Adam knew of 3 werewolves who had been witchborn. They were the 3 most dangerous and powerful werewolves in the world, and he didn't think it was an accident. The idea of that much power in a woman so morally ambivalent was disturbing.
Easy to judge her morality when I'm the one standing here drenched in the blood of strangers.
He could have let them all live, turned them over to the courts, but Cantrip was a government agency. These people were not serial killers, and if he turned them over to the courts, only Peter's body and a kill list would stand as witness against them. Additionally, it would come out that they had a drug that worked on the wolves, a vulnerability that Bran had been trying to keep secret. Probably the justice system would only slap the wrists of whoever was in command. He might even lose his job, to be hired immediately at 10 times his salary by someone who supported his vision. The end result would be that the enemy prospered, and the wolves would lose a few more weapons in their struggle to survive.
I could have captured the enemy without killing anyone. I chose not to.
They had attacked his people, and they had killed the one he most needed to protect. For that, they could only die. The world needed to remember that it was a bad idea to attack a werewolf pack. Adam picked up the phone again and dialed Hauptmann Security.
Gutstein.
It was very early in the morning, an odd time for the office to sound so busy.
Jim.
Adam closed his eyes.
Adam, sir, good to hear from you. Hey, can't hear a word he's saying. Shut up until we know what's going on. Sorry, sir. Brooks told us what he knew, and we've been worried.
It took Adam a second to connect Brooks to Warren's Kyle. He still wasn't at the top of his game. He needed food, and he refused to consider all the meat that was nearby.
And shorthanded?
I heard that. Tell Evan.
There goes that promotion, Evan.
It was an old joke. Adam was grateful for the routine that helped keep him human.
Are you okay, sir?
Never better, considering the scope of the snafu. However, I have the situation under control. I need you to find out who is in charge of security for Senator Campbell and tell him that a group from Cantrip at least one person in the military and a money man in the private sector have it in for the senator and tried to arrange an assassination.
The word is that they already know. Mercy was pretty clear to the police.
I'd rather know that they have that information for certain. You tell them that the people behind the attempt tried to blackmail me into doing it. And though that situation is under control, it is not certain that the senator is safe. I have taken a bite out of the Cantrip faction.
Adam smiled, with teeth.
The military gentleman was probably aimed more at us than him, and that might be true of the money man as well, but they are still in play. They had alternate plans that they couldn't force me to act.
The kill list hadn't been the only thing in their ops room. Mostly just notes and scraps of paper. But Adam was good at connecting the dots.
Someone in their security team is prepared to assassinate him should I fail. I failed, and hopefully the money is gone. But I don't know if he or she has any way to know that.
I'll find out who the senator's security detail is and tell them. I know someone who can talk to the senator directly. That will make the Fed send someone official to talk to you.
Tell them I won't talk officially.
Jim had been with him nearly 15 years.
There are bodies I won't claim, Jim, or lie about. My official story is that I woke up and the place they were holding us was on fire, so we escaped. Officially, I don't know anything, except that they seem to want me to assassinate the senator.
Is it on fire?
Not yet.
The witch could do a lot with a body, but she wouldn't be able to erase the marks his claws had made in the tile, or the doors he'd splintered.
Fix the bodies and burn the house.
The blood was drying on Adam's skin, and it itched. The smell was making his hunger worse.
Good. Good. I want you to know that we are behind you. You and your wolves. We've got your back. And right now, I've got all sorts of our most expensive equipment keeping watch on Kyle Brooks's house. And we have people following Mercy. We haven't been able to locate Jesse. Brooks told us Jesse was safe.
Yes, good. I'll stop in tomorrow, and we'll call a meeting to discuss how we should proceed.
Do you want us to tell your wife that you're okay?
Adam looked down at the dark stains on his hands.
No. I'll tell her when we're really out of here.
All right. We'll keep her safe.
His call finished, the pack left where they'd been waiting in the hallway, the last kill apparently complete, and streamed into the now crowded room. Honey, nearly as blood-splattered as he was, came forward with her head and tail low. When she reached him, she dropped to the ground and leaned against him, hard enough that if he had not been braced for it, he would have staggered. He bent down to rest his hand on the top of her head and looked over his battered pack.
No, I do not regret killing the people that did this to my wolves. Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night. What immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry?
Warren leaned against the doorway.
We're not tigers. We're werewolves, boss. God didn't make us. No how. Just ask the dead guys where we come from.
Despite the exhaustion and pain turning his skin haggard, Warren's eyes were sharp. Daryl reached over and gave Warren's hair a rough caress, an unusual sign of affection from the pack second.
Dead guys don't get an opinion. We're the good guys. We might be scary, but we're not the villains.
Dominant werewolves are control freaks and do not enjoy being passengers in cars. Azeel was no exception. He closed his eyes and sat tense and unhappy on the drive to Kennewick. We'd had a brief discussion about who would be driving, and he clearly felt my argument that I knew where I was going and he didn't was insufficient. He reluctantly agreed, however, that since Marsilia would hold me responsible for anything, more, that happened to her car, it was only fair that I drove. We couldn't take his rental because they came lowjacked to the max, and I didn't want to lead anyone to Sylvia's home if I could help it.
Don't worry, I already wrecked one car this week. I have no intention of wrecking another. Really.
He glowered at me, which was impressive since he didn't open his eyes. The morning sky was dark and overcast, which actually doesn't happen all that often here. It wasn't much lighter than it had been last night. Rain started to splatter the windshield.
After you retrieve Adam's daughter, you really still intend to contact the vampires?
Can't do that until it gets dark. I took a good look at the sky. Nighttime dark, not daybreak dark. I don't know what new delights this day will bring. However, if we all make it to this evening, then yes, I do. Marsilia owes the pack. Much as she'd like to see me roast on a good hot fire for a long time, that's personal. Business is more important. Business means that she doesn't want to get on the bad side of the werewolves, especially right now. She's down 4 of her 5 most powerful vampires. 2 of them betrayed her to a vampire trying to take over her seethe and were kicked out. Stefan left the seethe about the same time. The one powerful vampire left to her is mostly crazy, as far as I can tell. She can't afford to offend us.
What if the pack isn't a factor? What if they're all dead? Does she hate you enough to go after them? She cut her teeth in Italy during the Renaissance. A little sleight of hand is not beyond her now.
She knows about Bran, knows I was raised in his pack, and that he is fond of me. If it turns out that she was involved, he'd wipe her seed from the face of the earth, and she knows it. I thought about it. No, it isn't her. There are too many downsides and no profit in it for her. She actually likes Adam, I think, and he's pretty easy for her to deal with. Straightforward. Another alpha might not be so accommodating. Though without Adam, would there be a pack here in the Tri-Cities? He'd been brought in to deal with a lone wolf who had decided to build a pack, then started killing humans. Adam had stayed because the backbone of his business was security contracts with government contractors, and the Tri-Cities was full of them. That wouldn't benefit Marsilia either, though, because weakened as she was, she counted on Adam to keep the nastier, unallied supernatural creatures under control, and keep others from settling here at all.
Ah.
I pulled into the apartment complex. Azeel opened his eyes as we slowed.
Disappointing. I had hoped the responsible party would be the vampires. I could kill vampires, I think, without losing control. If it is humans who are our enemies, I shall have to find another means of stopping them.
He showed his teeth.
Age catches up with us all, and I enjoy the kill too much to be allowed it. If we are to be allies in truth, Mercedes, you should know my weaknesses before they become an issue.
Most of the werewolves who belong to the Marok's pack are there because they can't function in a normal pack. Azeel, it seemed, wasn't an exception. I wanted to blurt out, please, please don't kill anyone then, but managed to keep it to myself. Okay. I drove past Sylvia's apartment, still thinking about the likelihood that Azeel would be put in a position of killing someone. There were no empty spaces to park anywhere. I guess most people were still home at 7:30 in the morning on a Saturday, with rain coming down in sheets. Go figure. I finally found a place next to the dumpsters a few apartment blocks down. The little Corolla that had followed us from Kyle's house, presumably full of Hauptmann security personnel, had to keep going. I gave them a little wave as they went by. I got out, and something hit me in the back. The weight dropped me flat on my face on the pavement. Pain came right on the heels of the realization that someone had landed on me. I'd hit the ground limp, raising my head just a little to protect my face, years of karate benefiting me yet again. It set my knee and cheekbone off again.
Don't bite me.
The woman was perched on my lower back.
I don't want to hurt you.
She put something narrow and hard around my right wrist and reached for my left, braced for me to pull at the trapped hand. Instead, I rolled sideways toward the hand she'd already gotten. The move knocked her against Marsilia's new car, but not hard enough to do real damage, at least not to her. So I changed. The odd little cuff that had been tight on my wrist dropped off my coyote paw, and I slid out from under the woman completely. I also acquired an additional opponent, clothes. I'd slid out of Kyle's sweatpants when I slid out from under the woman. I leaped from my back feet and rolled in midair, pulling my head and front paws out of the sweatshirt and left it behind. My panties clung to my left foot and my tail, but the real trouble was my stupid bra. I took 2 more running leaps and tumbled head over tea kettle when my bra fouled my front legs, which meant that her first shot slid along my fur instead of wherever she meant the bullet to go. I rolled on the ground maybe 15 feet out, fighting the 2 stretchy to break straps. Leaping away had been the wrong thing if she was shooting. At least if I was rolling and tangling in clothes on top of her, she couldn't aim. I had a blink of time to see her rise to a shooter's crouch. A dark-skinned woman with white hair in a waist-length braid and a young face. She would have looked more at home in an anime convention than holding a big gun made bigger by the silencer on the barrel.
I didn't want to do it this way.
She took aim at my wiggling body.
Dead doesn't pay as much.
And then something dark and shadow quick passed over the roof of the car and landed on her. It took a moment for me to register Azeel crouched on top of her, his face eerily calm with eyes the color of citrines.
half-breed fey.
He examined her face as I changed back to human.
That gun has too much metal for a full-blooded fey to handle, even with leather gloves.
I instinctively wanted to argue with him. Z had no trouble with metal, but the dead woman kept the words in my mouth. I realized that, although he seemed to be calm enough, Aziel's bright eyes said differently. I'd been raised among werewolves, and I'd never seen anyone, not even Adam, move that quickly. Just a feeling of motion. Then she was dead, and Aziel was there. I pulled the bra all the way off to give myself time to think, and the scary werewolf time to calm down. At least the rain had let up. Realizing I was standing naked next to a very full parking lot that might soon be filling with people, I put the bra on correctly and pulled up the panties. The sweatshirt lay between Aziel and me, and I had to force myself to walk toward him and pick it up.
She's also truly gone. Full-blooded fey are usually harder to kill than this.
He patted down her body with a speed that indicated long familiarity with the process.
She didn't see you in the passenger seat.
I glanced at the Mercedes. The windows were darkened beyond strictly legal limits, especially the glass on the back and side of the car.
For Marsilia, it was a safety measure. If she happened to be out too long, the sun would be kept at bay.
For me, it meant that the fey woman hadn't noticed that there were two of us in the car. The passenger door was opened where Aziel had exited.
She was careless.
Aziel stood up and looked at me. I pulled the sweatshirt over my head and carefully didn't look up to his eye level as I pulled the shirt down. There was subtle tension in his body to match the predator's gaze, and I thought of his warning not 2 minutes earlier. I wondered if killing a half-blood fey was close enough to human to be an issue. He seemed to be handling it okay so far, but with the wolves, that could change awfully fast.
We need to hide her before someone walks out to dump their garbage.
I approached Aziel and kneeled. It was a submissive posture, even if I did it to grab the sweatpants that lay at his feet. He didn't say anything, just watched me. I didn't look up to see him doing it, but the back of my neck felt his eyes. The ground was really cold on my butt, and I pulled the pants on with more energy than usual. I had kept one sock on. I try not to think about how ridiculous I must look in coyote form when I have to change without losing my clothes first, but I couldn't help but wince as I looked about for the other sock. I didn't find the sock, but my shoes were next to the driver's side door of the Mercedes. The sight of the door put the search for my sock, the dead woman, and the werewolf who'd just killed her momentarily right out of my mind.
Damn.
I put my hand on the dented metal. When I'd knocked her into the car, the would-be assassin slash kidnapper's head had left an impression in the driver's side door. Cars aren't as tough as they used to be. My old rabbit could have taken a blow twice that hard without even noticing it. I took another step closer, and my cold, bare toes bumped into warm flesh. I looked down and met a pair of eyes that had been dark before death fogged them over. The half-fey woman had been stunning, but now, her magic gone, she looked merely ordinary. I glanced at the werewolf who had taken himself away from the body and now stood with his back toward me, facing the nearest apartment building, an apartment building with lots and lots of windows.
We've got to get this body out of sight.
She jerked a little when I moved her. I knew it was only the air left in her lungs, knew that her floppy head meant a broken neck, but her abrupt motion made me jump and drop her anyway. At least I'd moved her far enough so that I could get into the car. Aziel hadn't helped me move the body the first time, but as soon as the trunk was open, he picked her up without me saying anything. She was locked safely out of sight in the trunk, nearly as quickly as he'd taken her from alive to dead. I've seen a lot of wolves in human form with those bright wolf eyes. None of those eyes scared me as thoroughly as Aziel's had. Bran's son and chief assassin, Charles, scared me. But I was confident that if Charles wanted me dead, it would be quick and painless. Aziel's beast enjoyed playing with his victims. It would not be a good thing if Aziel had to kill again. But I was pretty sure it would take something bigger than me to keep it from happening. The bland little Corolla rolled past us again. The driver waved and shrugged. No parking for Hauptmann security. If I waved and shouted, would they come running or just keep looking for an empty parking space? Empty parking space. She'd been waiting right here for us, right next to the only parking place which conveniently had a garbage container for her to lie on top of. She'd jumped on me from above. I wondered if she'd glamored the spot so no one tried to park in it. I wondered if she'd known Tad was here. I wondered,
what if she had a partner?
I started walking briskly towards Sylvia's apartment, without bothering to put on shoes, and Aziel followed my lead. A case of frostbite I could deal with, not so much dead Sandoval girls. The Fae had been looking to take me alive, but hadn't hesitated to pull the gun. How did that play out into our villain's plan? And if they were willing to kill me, what about Jessie? Had she already visited the Sandovals? The only reason that I didn't flat out sprint was Azeel. If his wolf was that close to the surface, there was a chance he'd decide I was prey if I started running away.
Why do you think there might be another one?
Because so far, these guys have worked in teams of more than one. But that wasn't it. Not really. My instincts were chattering unhelpfully. Conclusions without evidence. He caught my not-quite-lie.
The group that took Adam were human, yes? Fae and human do not work well together. Yet, you are sure she is involved.
I stopped when I got eyes on Sylvia's building and glanced at Azeel. His eyes were dark again, which was a relief.
Mercedes, why do you think she is a part of the kidnapping plot and not of some other thing? Adam is alpha, and you are his mate, which makes you targets for all sorts of people.
It struck me that Azeel was perfectly okay with the fact that there might be two separate groups out to kill us.
I think that adding another...
I remembered that he already thought there was more than one gun aimed at my pack, even if they were all mostly working together.
Adding yet another enemy who wants to kidnap or kill me to this soup pushes my belief in the ultimate fairness of the universe too far to one side. I just wish I knew how she knew we were coming here.
I looked up at the back windows of Sylvia's apartment. She was a smart woman who worked at a police station. Her apartment was on the third floor. There was nothing to hint at a problem within. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe my dead assailant had been on her own.
Add to that, I haven't ticked off any of the Fae lately. It's not the vampires in a separate attack. If Marsilia had decided to put me out of my misery today, she would have succeeded. I wish I knew how our dead Fae knew to come here. Either they overheard Tad and me talking, or they somehow knew to look here.
Then I realized how stupid I'd been. Someone who didn't know the soap opera of my life from close up might not realize that Gabriel's mother and he were estranged. Sylvia's apartment would be the last place I'd have looked for the kids. But someone from the outside, someone who only knew that Gabriel had gone missing with Ben and Jessie and me, someone like that might very well check out his nearest relatives. I'd overestimated our enemies, and they'd found Jessie.
Mercy?
Azeel didn't scare me anymore. Not now, when I was pretty sure we were going to need him soon. The back wall of Sylvie's apartment blew out, spitting stucco, plaster, glass, insulation, and a man's body down on the sidewalk below. The body rolled when it hit the ground, got up, ran back at the apartment building, and did a Jackie Chan up the side. I was really happy to see him moving because I'd recognized him on the way down.
Tad!
Azeel and I took off towards the apartment building, splitting up when we reached it. He went in the same way Tad had, and I, not blessed with supernatural strength, had to run up the stairs instead. I ran up those steps as fast as I ever run.
Super fast.
The apartment door opened and Jessie and Gabriel spilled onto the stairs with various Sandovals clinging, pushing, and sobbing. I counted and came up short. No Sylvia, even as I slid over the guardrail to stand on the outside of the bars on the edge of the stairs to let the youngsters by.
Your mom?
At work.
I tossed in the keys to Marsilia's car.
Take the car, it's by the garbage bins three buildings over. Get to Kyle's house, but don't speed. You have a body in the trunk and no child car seats.
Body?
Tia didn't seem horrified. They were tough, those Sandoval kids. They'd be okay with a body in the trunk of the car.
Bad guy. Tried to kill me and got taken out by my backup.
Cool.
Sissy held up a thumbs up. They hadn't paused in their downward trek. And once on solid ground, Gabriel took the lead to usher all of his sisters away from the building. Jessie looked up and mouthed, "Dad," at me.
He's alive, but that's all I know. Get out of here.
And then I rolled back over the railing and up the last set of stairs and headed to the apartment, only then remembering that I'd left my gun in Marsilia's car. I stripped out of my clothes and let my coyote out. In the distance, I could hear sirens. The police department wasn't too far from here, and there was no way anyone could have ignored the noise coming from Sylvia's apartment. As human, I stood no chance against something that could throw Tad through a wall. As a coyote, I was definitely outmatched, but I could be distracting. And I was just that much faster on four legs than on two. I skulked into the living room, the only room I'd been in before, through the front door that the kids left ajar. On top of the scent of the Sandoval family, I could smell werewolf, Tad, and something Fae. The Fae smell mostly like the old philosopher's division of the world to me. Earth, air, fire, water, with the addition of green growing things. Ariana smelled like forest, and so did this Fae. The noise was coming from a room farther into the apartment. I set caution aside and bolted down the narrow hallway and into the master bedroom at the end. The dead woman's partner was nightmare hideous. His head was misshapen and too large for his body, One large eye, emerald green and liquid, stared off to the side, while the other was only half as large and solid black. Two odd lumps that looked like nascent antlers emerged from his temples. His nose was two slits above a mouth too large for his face and filled with uneven spade-shaped yellow teeth. A black tongue flicked out and across his nose slits. For all his horribleness, he wasn't more than 4 feet tall. His body was slender, almost delicate-looking, with wrists smaller than mine, in human shape. His outsized, four-fingered hands gripped a sword made of some sort of black metal that was nearly as tall as he was. Azeel had a baseball bat and was using it like a katana. Turn and turn, and never let the bastard get a good, hard strike on your weapon. Tad had a pair of kitchen knives, and was keeping the Fae from getting into a good rhythm with them. Unhappily, it was interfering with Azeel, too. The Fae fought well, like someone who had learned the sword when it was the weapon of choice. Not all Fae were long-lived. Some had lives comparable to insects. A few seasons, then gone. Most of those, Z had told me once, when he was a little drunk, were gone. Their more fragile lives were incapable of dealing with the steel and concrete that was conquering the Earth. Others lived nearly human long. 20 years for some, 150 for others. Originally, only a small percentage of Fae were almost immortal. The rise of humans and technology had selected for those tougher Fae, and they now accounted for a far higher percentage of the Fae than they ever had before. A human lifetime was long enough to become an expert swordsman, but Azeel was a famous swordsman with centuries of practice, and this Fae was more than holding his own. He was old. Tad wasn't doing badly. His father had taught him. If Tad had had something bigger than kitchen knives, and if he and Azeel had fought together before, they could have worked together. As it was, they had difficulty staying out of each other's way. Azeel knocked the Fae into Sylvia's desk, which sent monitor and keyboard crashing off the top, along with a small clay jar filled with writing implements. I slunk down low and slid under Sylvia's bed, stopping at the foot with my nose under the bedspread, watching for a chance to be of use. The Fae damn near levitated off the desk like a cat thrown in a swimming pool, and all but crashed into Azeel to get away. In the Tri-Cities, whose population has largely been employed by the government in one way or another for more than half a century, there is an abundance of those old, clunky desks straight out of the 1950s. I've seen them at rummage sales and every other kind of sale. And once, memorably, a good friend went to a government sale and thought she was bidding on a pallet with two desks and a dozen broken chairs, but ended up with a row of pallets, nearly 50 desks, 315 broken office chairs, a non-functional electric pencil sharpener, and four boxes of pink erasers. My office chair at the garage was actually four of those chairs, all Frankensteined into one that worked. These industrial-strength desks were painted various shades of gray and institutional green or yellow. Sylvia's desk was of the yellow variety and, like all of them, made of steel. Which meant that unlike the dead woman, and despite the big sword he was waving around so skillfully, this Fae could not bear the touch of cold iron or steel. Tad dropped his knives and lunged, as Azeel pushed the Fae directly in front of me. I sprang out from my hiding place and buried my teeth in the Fae's left calf. I locked my jaws as best I could. Azeel struck the Fae's sword on an upswing to keep it from hitting me with the pommel. The sword, edge against the wood of Azeel's weapon, sliced the bat in two, leaving Azeel with 18 inches of wood to fight the Fae's magicked blade. It smelled like Z's magic. The Fae aimed the sharp end of his sword toward me.
Let go!
The steel desk hit the Fae. Papers, bills, bits and pieces of computer parts, and office detritus flew out the previously made hole in the wall, along with the Fae and me still attached to his calf. Landing jolted me enough that I lost hold of his calf, only then realizing that Tad's let go had been aimed at me. The desk landed right next to my head before rolling onto the Fae, leaving me half stunned on the grass. I smelled burning flesh and he lifted the desk off and tossed it into the road, where it bounced once and cartwheeled into a battered truck. He started to reach past me for his sword, which lay a dozen feet from us, where it had fallen. But someone else got there first. The Fae hesitated for a bare moment, his eyes on the sword, but the sound of sirens up close and personal, or maybe it was the face of the man holding his sword, made him turn on his heels and run.
You'd better run!
Tad leaned cautiously out of the open hole in the wall of Sylvia's bedroom.
Coward!
The man who stood over me tossed the Fae sword aside and dropped down to sit beside me. Gentle hands moved over me, but I couldn't focus, couldn't breathe. hoped so hard that it took longer to regain my ability to pump air into my lungs. As soon as I did, I shifted back to human and squirmed into his lap.
Adam.
I clutched him like a ninny while something tight in the middle of my chest softened. Tears slid down my cheeks. It would have been humiliating if he hadn't been clutching me back just as hard. I wiped my eyes and pulled away to look at him. He was a little worse for wear, his beard at the scratchy stage, and his eyes were... It had been bad. However he'd escaped, it had cost him. He kissed me, and it was a hard, possessive kiss.
So, I went hunting you and got here just in time to see you flying out of a hole in the third story of an apartment attached to a man's leg.
There were burns on his lips, and I reached up to touch them.
Silver.
It was important, because I didn't want to hurt Adam, but I lost track of what I was saying.
Hey, you two lovebirds? I couldn't help but notice that Mercy is buck naked and we have police arriving, so I fetched her clothes.
Adam looked up and smiled at Tad.
Better get dressed, Mercy. Tad's right.
I bounced out of his lap and grabbed the clothes from Tad and pulled them on with more speed than grace. Everything hurt, and when I looked at Adam, who was rising to his feet, nothing hurt at all. Tad strode over to the blade on the grass and looked at it assessingly.
Come here, then.
He held his hand up. The sword flew into his grip, then disappeared. He closed his hand over a small bit of metal and shoved it into his pocket.
That will make it a little hard to explain the bat it cut into two, but it's too dangerous to allow it to get into police custody. Dangerous for the police.
The head felt fuzzy, but then I'd just been tossed out of a 30-story window and discovered Adam was safe. And here. And that meant I didn't have to be in charge anymore. With Adam here, I had no worries left at all. Something had obviously happened. Some magic that smelled like Fae had just been waiting for that moment, but I was too happy to worry about that. I tied the drawstring at my waistband and turned to Tad.
Your father made that sword, didn't he? Out of something that isn't iron or steel so that the Fae could use it.
Tad nodded, looking at me closely.
I think there were 5 of these swords, each a little bit different from the other. Dad has one. All of them are bad news. If someone's not using them to slaughter a crowd of people, then some damned Grey Lord is blathering about how such a Fae treasure needs to be protected. The Grey Lords are amassing Fae artifacts like dragons amassing gold. And if this is too dangerous for the police, it's way too dangerous to be putting it into the hands of the Grey Lords. I'll give this one to my dad, and he can worry about dealing with it.
He looked at me carefully and tilted his head.
Touch your nose, Mercy.
I put my hand on my nose, but it felt like my nose. If there was some smudge or something, I couldn't tell. Tad looked at Adam.
See?
Before he could say more, a police car stopped next to the desk in the road, lights flashing but siren thankfully silent, as if it was the signal everyone was waiting for. People started boiling out of their apartments. 2 more police cars followed, and the middle one disgorged Sylvia. Tony got out of the driver's seat and followed her.
Gabriel and the kids are okay. I sent them to Kyle's.
Sylvia closed her eyes and crossed herself, then looked up at the hole in the wall of her apartment.
Tad stopped them, and Gabriel made sure all the kids got out safely.
Who did this?
Tony was looking at the hole in the wall, too. Adam moved behind me and wrapped his arms around my shoulders. I leaned my chin on his forearms, content in his hold.
They were professionals. Mercenaries.
There had been no fire in the woman who attacked me. No anger, no sorrow. This had been a job and nothing more.
I know who this one was. Not that it will help us any. Hey, Tony. Long time no see.
Good to see you, Chico. What happened?
Mercy stowed Jesse and Gabriel. You know Gabriel, right?
Tony looked at Sylvia and nodded.
I introduced Gabriel to Mercy in the first place.
Don't think I haven't forgotten that.
Tony winced a little. Sylvia gave me a look that would have sent vampires running for cover. She was rather pointedly ignoring Adam.
You are sure that the children are safe?
I sent them to Kyle's house.
But she didn't know Kyle.
He's the boyfriend of one of the wolves, a lawyer. He's got security people guarding his house, so the kids will be safe there.
I'm sorry, Sylvia. If I had thought that they would know to look here, I never would have brought Jesse.
You also sent this one.
She tipped her head toward Tad.
Though he looks like a boy, no older than Gabriel.
I'm tough.
I couldn't tell what Sylvia was thinking, but she bent down and started collecting the paper that littered the ground.
Right.
Tad turned back to Tony.
So Mercy left Jesse and Gabriel with Sylvia, thinking they would be safe here from whoever was trying to grab them. But she was worried about them and asked me to keep an eye out.
You're Z's son. I keep forgetting that makes you half Fae.
It was easy to forget. Tad looked human, just like the purebloods do most of the time. I never have known whether Tad's appearance is a glamour like the one his father wears, or if he really does just look human. Half-fey, I am told, can go either way, and some of the half-fey, who don't look human, also don't have enough magic to hide what they are. A lot of those don't make it to adulthood. The Fey are a very, very practical race as a whole.
Mercy knew I have enough oomph to cause a big ruckus if someone came calling, and someone did.
He looked up at the apartment ruefully.
If we can't catch the bastards who did this, I suppose I'll have to pay to get it fixed.
Not your debt. We will take care of the expense of fixing your apartment, Sylvia.
I waited for her to explode, and I couldn't blame her. No one looking at the wall that lay mostly on the postage stamp lawn next to the apartment would think that her children had been safe.
It was my fault, Sylvia. These guys knew the identities of all the pack members, even the ones they shouldn't have. I assumed that they would also know that you and Gabriel hadn't been talking, but I think they just hunted down Gabriel's nearest relative.
Sylvia stood up, tapped the handful of bills she'd gathered on her leg, and looked at the hole in her apartment. Then she looked at me.
No. It isn't your fault. It is the fault of the people who came into my home intending to harm innocents.
You are right, but the pack will still pay for the damages. They were hunting my daughter.
She frowned at him, but couldn't look at his face for too long.
All right.
She looked at Tad.
You are a good young man, and it seems just as tough as you told me you were. Thank you for the care you took of my children.
Hey, Sylvia!
A young man wearing a WSU shirt stood at the edge of the crowd of onlookers.
You need some help? Me and Tom can get your desk back up to your apartment, and maybe some of these looky-loos can pick up the mess.
He tugged the braid of a cute girl a few years his junior, who was standing next to him.
Stop it.
She batted his hand away.
Yeah, sure, Miss Sandoval. We can do cleanup.
An anxious middle-aged woman with a clipboard ran out to join the festivities and approached one of the nearby officers who was taking down notes.
I'm Sally Osterberg. I'm the apartment manager. Can you tell me what happened?
We're just getting into that, Sally.
Sylvia was still unnaturally calm. Maybe it was that she had all that training for working dispatch, or maybe it was just being a single parent to a herd of kids.
Do you prefer to do the repairs yourself and submit a bill, or would you rather we hire contractors to fix it?
Sally turned to Adam. Her face lit up.
Adam Hauptman? You are Adam Hauptman? Oh my goodness. I thought, I saw in the news that you had been kidnapped by some kind of paramilitary group. Did you have to fight your way out?
I tipped my head so that I could see Adam smile.
I did, and this seems to be connected to whoever has it in for my pack and me.
This is so exciting. Wait until I tell my sister we had a werewolf crash through a wall. And not just any werewolf either.
She caught herself and blushed bright red.
I sound like a dork.
No.
Adam didn't bother to correct her misapprehension about who had done most of the destruction.
You don't. You sound like anyone would when caught up in Twilight Zone events. Can you get someone to board up that hole so Miss Sandoval's possessions don't suffer from the weather?
Oh, yes, right away.
Thank you.
He gave her another smile, which she returned, until her eyes met mine.
I'll just go do that.
Tony watched her trot off, then looked at Adam.
Next time we have a domestic disturbance, I'm taking you with me.
Adam smiled, and I could see how tired he was.
That only works sometimes. On violent men, I often have the opposite effect. Unless you want bodies on the ground, you'll want to leave me home.
So, is there someone here who wants to tell us what happened?
The officer standing beside Tony opened to a new page of his notebook.
Without bodies or injured, we're not in emergency status. But the lieutenant does like us to get enough for an accurate report.
I opened my mouth, but Tad gave me another of those sharp looks he'd been sending me. He turned to face the policeman who'd asked, and at the same time, put his body between me and the officer as his best aw shucks smile lit his face.
I spent most of the last day sitting on that fence.
He nodded toward the 8-foot concrete block fence that encircled the apartment complex. Then he saw the cop's face.
I know, right? You're wondering why I pulled guard duty when I look like the before picture on a gym advertisement. My dad is Fey, though, and I'm stronger than I look. Anyway, Jessie was making...
Jessie?
Adam's daughter. The one we were trying to keep safe from the bad guys?
Tad moved behind the officer so he could see his notes.
She spells it J-E-S-S-E, and I'm Tad, like Tadpole, short for Thaddeus, but don't go there. And my last name is Adalbert Smiter.
He spelled that for him too, twice. The officer turned to force Tad to give him some space, but Tad just followed him around.
Thank you. What happened to the wall? I was eating Jesse's brownies when someone rang the doorbell. I sent Jesse, Gabriel, and the kids into one of the bedrooms and went to answer the door.
So you let him in?
Do I look like I'm five? No. I asked who it was, and he said he was UPS and had a package for us. I told him to leave it on the porch because I was naked, just out of the shower.
I thought you were eating brownies.
The officer seemed to have resigned himself to having Tad hanging over his shoulder.
I was.
Tad shook his head.
I lied to the guy. I was there to keep the kids safe. No way was I opening the door to some stranger. There are things out there who can take it for an invitation, and you don't invite evil into your home.
No, I can see that you wouldn't.
Tony rubbed his mouth to hide a smile. Tony had seen Tad in full-blown look-at-me mode before. It wasn't that Tad was lying to the police officer, but, like a good stage magician, he'd keep the police looking where he wanted them to look. I didn't know what Tad was trying to cover up, but with Adam here and safe, I didn't really care.
I thought you Faye couldn't lie.
The kid who was supposed to be cleaning Sylvia's stuff off the ground was clearly more interested in our conversation. Tad nodded at him.
Yeah, that's only the true Faye and some of the halfies. All that kind of stuff doesn't apply to me, because I lie.
He spread his arms to invite everyone to admire.
And I'm still here.
Tad kept his attention on the crowd instead of the police.
Anyway, the supposed UPS guy, he said he needed a signature. I told him to leave a form and we'd pick the package up at the UPS office, and that's when he unlocked the door with some kind of pick lock or magic. I wasn't paying attention because he tried to hit me with a stun gun. When that didn't work, he drew a freaking sword and tried to take off my head.
A sword?
The officer was starting to look as though he was having trouble keeping up.
I know, right? Weirded me out too. I guess he was pretty old because he knew what he was doing with that thing. I took 2 years of Aikido at school and he made a monkey out of me.
I wondered if anyone would notice that although Tad was pretty banged up, there were no sword cuts.
I drew him back farther into the apartment to give the kids a chance to escape. Sometime in there, he tossed me through the wall.
All the people who were cleaning up the mess near him and the policeman and policewoman who were listening to his story looked at Tad, because he didn't look like he'd been tossed through a wall. Tad wasn't good looking. His ears were too big and they stuck out, and his nose was flattened as if he'd gone 3 rounds with George Foreman, but when he wanted people to watch him, they did. It wasn't magic. It was force of personality.
Halfway. Sometimes it helps.
He looked up at the hole too and shook his head.
Doesn't mean it didn't hurt. I ran back up and kept him occupied while the kids escaped. I tossed the desk at him, knocked him out the same hole he'd knocked me through, and by then you guys were pretty close. He picked himself up and ran.
Apparently, we weren't going to talk about Azeel. I glanced around but didn't see Bran's wolf anywhere. Maybe Azeel was responsible for Tad's look-at-me-not-what-I'm-hiding performance.
Adam, what can you tell me about your kidnapping?
Tony wasn't as caught up in Tad's performance as the other cops were. Adam gave him a tired smile.
I'm going to get some rest. I'll have my lawyer get in touch with you and I'll give a full statement tomorrow. Okay?
Fine. Get in touch before 10 tomorrow or I'll give you a call. Mercy, your turn.
I thought about the body in the back of Marsilia's car and tried to decide where to start.
She didn't see much.
This time, I could feel Tad's magic push past me, focusing Tony's attention on him.
How about she takes Adam home and they both talk to you tomorrow? I know who this guy was because he's a Spriggand. That's a kind of fey and fairly rare, thankfully, because they are nasty, bitter mischief makers one and all.
Okay.
This one is a pureblood, and that makes him a renegade because he's not holed up in the reservations with the rest of the fey. There's only one renegade Spriggand. He goes by the name of Sliver and usually hangs out with a half-fey woman called Spice. They hire out as muscle or assassins. I didn't see any woman, but she might have been keeping watch.
Spice must be the dead woman in the trunk of Marsilia's car. It would have been a good time for me to tell the police about her. Her death was self-defense. If I told them right now, it would look better than if they'd found out about it later. But I was content just resting against Adam and couldn't find the impetus to say anything. Tony frowned at Tad.
And why do you know the names of assassins for hire?
Tad's brilliant facade soured.
Because even though they don't care a fig for the half-bloods, the pure-blooded Fae send us lists of Fae who did not answer the Grey Lord's call. We, the rejected, are to watch out for these Fae and turn in any purebloods we see.
Tony nodded slowly.
I see. And if you don't turn them in?
Tad's smile left entirely, and he looked very adult.
Nothing good. The Grey Lords don't have much use for half-bloods.
Tony looked around at the destruction that was getting cleaned up. It was a crime scene, so probably no one should be cleaning it. But it was also Sylvia's private papers flying in the wind.
No bodies on the ground.
The officer Tad had cornered turned his attention to Tony.
No one bleeding, no lawsuit because Mr. Hauptmann is paying the damages, though we'll need to do a report just in case. We can let them clean up, Tony.
He looked at Adam.
Mr. Hauptmann is coming in tomorrow to make a statement about his kidnapping. That works for me, Tony.
Okay.
He looked at Sylvia.
Why don't you give your keys to one of your neighbors so they can lock up after they're done cleaning the mess? I'll take you to Kyle's house so you can look in on the kids.